We are continuing chapter 19 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. The morning of the match dawned bright and cold. When Harry awoke, he looked round at Ron's bed and saw him sitting bolt upright, his arms around his knees, staring fixedly into space. "You all right?" said Harry. Ron nodded but did not speak. Harry was reminded forcibly of the time Ron had accidentally put a slug-vomiting charm on himself. He looked just as pale and sweaty as he had done then, not to mention as reluctant to open his mouth. "You just need some breakfast," Harry said bracingly. "Come on." The great hall was filling up fast when they arrived, the talk louder and mood more exuberant than usual. As they passed the Slytherin table, there was an upsurge of noise. Harry looked round and saw that in addition to the usual green and silver scarves and hats, every one of them was wearing a silver badge in the shape of what seemed to be a crown. For some reason, many of them waved at Ron and laughed uproariously. Harry tried to see what was written on the badges as he walked by, but he was too concerned to get Ron past their table than to linger quickly to linger long enough to read them. They received a rousing welcome at the Gryffindor table, where everyone was wearing red and gold. But far from raising Ron's spirits, the cheers seemed to sap the last of his morale. He collapsed onto the bench, looking as though he were facing his final meal. "I must have been mental to do this," he said in a croaky whisper. "Mental." "Don't be thick," said Harry firmly, passing him a choice of cereals. "You're going to be fine. It's normal to be nervous." "I'm rubbish," croaked Ron. "I'm lousy. I can't play to save my life. What was I thinking?" "Get a grip," said Harry sternly. "Look at the save you made with your foot the other day. Even Fred and George said that was brilliant." Ron turned a tortured face to Harry. "That was an accident," he whispered miserably. "I didn't mean to do it. I slipped off my broom when none of you were looking, and when I was trying to get back on, I kicked the quaffle by accident." "Well," said Harry, recovering quickly from this unpleasant surprise, "a few more accidents like that and the game's in the bag, isn't it?" Hermione and Ginny sat down opposite them, wearing red and gold scarves, gloves, and rosette. "How are you feeling?" Ginny asked Ron, who was now staring into the dregs of milk at the bottom of his empty cereal bowl, as though seriously considering attempting to drown himself in them. "He's just nervous," said Harry. "Well, that's a good sign. I never feel you perform as well in exams if you're not a bit nervous," said Hermione, heartily. "Hello," said a vague and dreamy voice from behind them. Harry looked up. Luna Lovegood had drifted over from the Ravenclaw table. Many people were staring at her, and a few were openly laughing and pointing. She had managed to procure a hat shaped like a life-sized lion's head, which was perched precariously on her head. "I'm supporting Gryffindor," said Luna, pointing unnecessarily at her hat. "Look what it does." She reached up and tapped her hat with her wand. It opened its mouth wide and gave an extremely realistic roar that made everyone in the vicinity jump. "It's good, isn't it?" said Luna happily. "I wanted to have it chewing up a serpent to represent Slytherin, you know, but there wasn't time. Anyway, good luck, Ronald." She drifted away. They had not quite recovered from the shock of Luna's hat before Angelina came hurrying toward them, accompanied by Kate and Alicia, whose eyebrows had mercifully returned to normal by Madame Pomfrey. "When you're ready," she said, "we're going straight down to the pitch. Check out the conditions and change." "We'll be there in a bit," Harry reassured her. "Ron's just got to have some breakfast." It became clear after 10 minutes, however, that Ron was not capable of eating anything more than, and Harry thought it best to get him down to the changing rooms. As they rose from the table, Hermione got up too, and taking Harry's arm, she drew him to one side. "Don't let Ron see what's on those Slytherin badges," she whispered urgently. Harry looked questioningly at her, but she shook her head warningly. Ron had just ambled over to them, looking lost and desperate. "Good luck, Ron," said Hermione, standing on tiptoe and kissing him on the cheek. "And you, Harry?" Ron seemed to come to himself slightly as they walked across the great hall. He touched the spot on his face where Hermione had kissed him, looking distracted, though he was not quite sure what had just happened. He seemed too puzzled to notice much around him, but Harry cast a curious glance at the crown-shaped badges as they passed the Slytherin table, and this time he made out the words etched onto them. "Weasley is our king." With an unpleasant feeling that this could mean nothing good, he hurried Ron across the entrance hall, down the stone steps, and out into the icy air. The frosty glass crunched under their feet as they turned and hurried down the sloping lawns toward the stadium. There was no wind at all, and the sky was a uniform pearly white, which meant visibility would be good without the drawback of direct sunlight in their eyes. Harry pointed out these encouraging factors to Ron as they walked, but he was not sure that Ron was listening. Angelina had changed already and was talking to the rest of the team when they entered. Harry and Ron pulled on their robes. Ron attempted to do up his back to front for several minutes before Alicia took pity on him and went to help, and then sat down to listen as the pre-match talk, while the babble of voices outside grew steadily louder as the crowd came pouring out of the castle toward the pitch. "Okay, I've only just found out the lineup for Slytherin," said Angelina, consulting a piece of parchment. "Last year's beaters, Derek and Bull, have left, but it looks as though Montague's replaced them with the usual gorillas, rather than anyone who can fly particularly well. There are two blokes called Crab and Goyle. I don't know much about them."
"We do," said Harry and Ron together.
"Well, they don't look bright enough to tell one end of the broom from the other," said Angelina, pocketing her parchment. "But then I was always surprised Derek and Bull managed to find their way onto the pitch without signposts."
"Crab and Goyle are in the same mold," said Harry.
They could hear hundreds of footsteps mounting the banked benches of the spectators' stands. Some people were singing, though Harry could not make out the words. He was starting to feel nervous, but he knew his butterflies were nothing compared to Ron's, who was clutching his stomach and staring straight ahead again, his jaw set and his complexion pale gray.
"It's time," Angelina said in a hushed voice, looking at her watch. "Come on, everyone, good luck."
The team rose, shouldering their brooms, and marched in single file out of their changing room and into the dazzling sunlight. A roar of sound greeted them, in which Harry could still hear singing, though it was muffled by the cheers and whistles. The Slytherin team was standing, waiting for them. They, too, were wearing those silver crown-shaped badges. The new captain, Montague, was built along the same lines as Dudley Dursley, with massive forearms like Harry Ham's. Behind him lurked Crab and Goyle, almost as large, blinking stupidly in the sunlight and swinging their new beaters' bats. Malfoy stood to one side, the sunlight gleaming on his white blonde hair. He caught Harry's eye and smirked, tapping the crown-shaped badge on his chest. "Captains, shake hands," ordered the referee, Madame Hooch, as Angelina and Montague reached each other. Harry could tell that Montague was trying to crush Angelina's fingers, though she did not wince.
"Mount your brooms," Madame Hooch placed her whistle in her mouth and blew.
The balls were released, and the 14 players shot upwards. Out of the corner of his eye, Harry saw Ron streak off toward the goalposts. Harry zoomed higher, dodging a bludger, and set off on a wide lap of the pitch, gazing around for a glint of gold. On the other side of the stadium, Draco Malfoy was doing exactly the same.
"And it's Johnson, Johnson with a quaffle. What a player that girl is. I've been saying it for years, but she still won't go out with me."
"Jordan!" yelled Professor McGonagall.
"Just fun fact, Professor, adds a bit of interest. And she's ducked Warrington. She's past Montague. She's ouch!" and hit from behind by a bludger from Crab. Montague catches a quaffle. Montague heading back up the pitch. A nice bludger there from George Weasley. There's a bludger to the head of Montague. He drops the quaffle, caught by Katie Bell. Katie Bell of Gryffindor, reverse pass to Alicia Spinett, and Spinett's away. Lee Jordan's commentary rang through the stadium, and Harry listened hard as he could through the wind whistling in his ears and the din of the crowd, all yelling and booing and singing.
"Dodges Warrington, avoids a bludger. Close call, Alicia," and the crowd are loving this. "Just listen to them. What are they saying?" As Lee paused to listen, the song rose louder and a clear from the sea of green and silver in the Slytherin section of the stands. "Weasley cannot save a thing. He cannot block a single ring. That's why Slytherins all sing. Weasley is our king. Weasley was born in a bin. He always lets the quaffle in. Weasley will make sure we win. Weasley is our king."
"And Alicia passes back to Angelina," Lee shouted, as Harry swerved, his insides boiling, at what he now just heard. He knew Lee was trying to drown out the words of the song.
"Come on now, Angelina. Looks like she's got just the keeper to beat. She shoots and she..."
Bletchley, the Slytherin keeper, had saved the goal. He threw the quaffle to Warrington, who sped off with it, zigzagging in between Alicia and Kate.
The singing from below grew louder and louder as he drew nearer and nearer to Ron. Weasley is our king, Weasley is our king. He always lets the quaffle in, Weasley is our king. Harry could not help himself. Abandoning his search for the snitch, he wheeled around to watch Ron, a lonely figure at the far end of the pitch, hovering before the three goal hoops while massive Warrington pelted toward him. And it's Warrington with a quaffle. Warrington heading for the goal. He's out of bludger range with just the keeper ahead. A great swell of song rose from the Slytherin stands below. So Weasley cannot save a thing. He cannot block a single ring. So it's the first test for the new Gryffindor keeper, Weasley, brother of beaters Fred and George, and a promising new talent on the team. Come on, Ron. But the scream of delight came from Slytherin's end. Ron had dived wildly, his arms wide, and the quaffle had soared between them, straight through to Ron's central hoop. Slytherin score, that's, said Lee's voice amid the cheering and booing from the crowd below. So that's 10-0 Slytherin. Bad luck, Ron. And the Slytherins sang even louder. Weasley was born in a bin, he always lets the quaffle in. And Gryffindor back in position, it's Katie Bell tinking up the pitch, cried Lee valiantly, though the singing was now so deafening he could hardly make himself heard above it. Weasley will make sure we win. Weasley's our king. Harry, what are you doing? Screamed Angelina, soaring past him to keep up with Katie. Get going. Harry realized he'd been stationary in midair for over a minute, watching the progress of the match without sparing a thought for the whereabouts of the snitch. Horrified, he went into a dive and started circling the pitch again, staring around, trying to ignore the chorus, now thundering through the stadium. Weasley is our king. Weasley is our king. There was no sign of the snitch anywhere he looked. Malfoy was still circling the stadium just as he was. They passed one another midway around the pitch, going in opposite directions, and he heard Malfoy singing loudly, Weasley was born in a bin. And it's Warrington again, bellowed Lee, who passes to Pusey. Pusey's off to pass Snit. Come on now, Angelina, you can take him. Turns out she can't. But nice bludger from Fred Weasley. I mean, George Weasley. Oh, who cares? One of them anyway. And Warrington drops the quaffle and Katie Bell, or drops it too. So that's Montague with the quaffle. Slytherin captain Montague takes the quaffle and he's up off the pitch. Come on now, Gryffindor, block him. Harry zoomed around the end of the stadium past the Slytherin goal hoops, willing himself not to look at what was going on at Ron's end. As he sped past the Slytherin keeper, he heard Bletchley singing along with the crowd below. Weasley cannot save a thing. And Pusey's dodged Alicia again, and he's heading straight for the goal. Stop it, Ron. Harry didn't have to look to see what happened. There was a terrible groan from the Gryffindor end, coupled with fresh screams and applause from the Slytherin. Looking down, Harry saw the pug-faced Pansy Parkinson right at the front of the stands, her back to the pitch as she conducted the Slytherin supporters, who were roaring. That's why Slytherins all sing, Weasley is our king. But 20-0 was still nothing. There was still plenty of time for Gryffindor to catch up or catch the snitch. A few goals and they would be in the lead as usual, Harry assured himself, bobbing and weaving through the other players in pursuit of something shiny that turned out to be Montague's watch strap. But Ron let in two more goals. There was an edge of panic in Harry's desire to find the snitch now. If he could just get it soon and finish the game quickly. And Katie Bell of Gryffindor dodges Pusey, ducks Montague. Nice swerve, Katie, and she throws it to Johnson. Johnson, Angelina Johnson takes the quaffle. She's past Warrington. She's headed for the goal. Come on now, Angelina. Gryffindor score! It's 40-10. 40-10 Slytherin, and Pusey has the quaffle. Harry could hear Luna's ludicrous lion roaring amidst the Gryffindor cheers and felt heartened. Only 30 points in it. That was nothing they could pull back easily. Harry ducked a bludger that Crabbe had sent rocking in his direction and resumed his frantic scouring of the pitch for the snitch, keeping one eye on Malfoy in case he showed signs of having spotted it. But Malfoy, like him, continued to soar around the stadium, searching fruitlessly. I don't think Harry quite realizes that the most important thing is for him to find the snitch, and it really doesn't matter that they're 30 points behind. They could lose, you know, another 50, and it wouldn't even be a thing. Pusey throws to Warrington, Warrington to Montague, Montague back to Pusey. Johnson intervenes, Johnson takes the quaffle. Johnson to Bell, this looks good, I mean bad. Bell's hit by a bludger from Goyle of Slytherin, and it's Pusey in position. Weasley was born in a bin, he always lets the quaffle in. Weasley will make sure we win. But Harry had seen it at last. The tiny fluttering golden snitch was hovering feet above the ground at the Slytherin end of the pitch. He dived.
In a matter of seconds, Malfoy was streaking out of the sky on Harry's left, a green and silver blur lying flat on his broom. The Snitch skirted the foot of one of the goal hoops and scooted off toward the other side of the stands. Its change of direction suited Malfoy, who was nearer. Harry pulled his firebolt around. He and Malfoy were now neck and neck. Feet from the ground, Harry lifted his right hand from his broom, stretching toward the Snitch. To his right, Malfoy extended his arm, too, and was reaching, groping. It was all over in two breathless, desperate, windswept seconds. Harry's fingers closed around the tiny, struggling ball. Malfoy's fingernails scribbled the back of Harry's hand hopelessly. Harry pulled his broom upward, holding the struggling ball in his hands, and the Gryffindor spectators screamed their approval. They were saved. It did not matter that Harry let those goals in. Nobody would remember that as long as Gryffindor had won. Wham! A bludger hit Harry square in the small of his back, and he flew forward off his broom. Luckily, he was only 5 or 6 feet off the ground, and having dived so low to catch the Snitch, but he was winded all the same as he landed flat on his back on the frozen pitch. He heard Madame Hooch's shrill whistle, an uproar in the stands compounded by catcalls, angry yells, and a jeering thud, and then Angelina's frantic voice. "Are you all right?" "Of course I am," said Harry grimly, taking her hand and allowing her to pull him to his feet. Madame Hooch was zooming toward one of the Slytherin pairs above him, though he could not see who it was from this angle. "Who's that thug Crab?" said Angelina angrily. "He whacked the bludger at you the moment he saw you'd got the Snitch. But we won, Harry, we won." Harry heard a snort from behind him, and he turned around, still holding the Snitch tightly in his hand. Draco Malfoy had landed close by. White-faced with fury, he still managed to sneer. "Saved Weasley's neck, haven't you?" he said to Harry. "I've never seen a worse keeper, but..." And he was born in a bin. "Did you like my lyrics, Potter?" Harry didn't answer. He turned away to meet the rest of the team, who were now landing one by one, yelling and punching in the air in triumph. All except Ron, who had dismounted from his broom over the goalposts, and seemed to be making his way slowly back to the changing room alone. Man, he's lost. Okay. "We wanted to write another couple of verses," Malfoy called, as Katie and Angelina hugged Harry. "We couldn't find rhymes for fat and ugly. We want to sing about his mother, you see." "Talk about sour grapes," said Angelina, casting Malfoy a disgusted look. "We couldn't fit in useless loser easily either for his father, you know." Fred and George had realized what Malfoy was talking about. Halfway through shaking Harry's hand, they stiffened, looking around at Malfoy. "Leave it," said Angelina at once, taking Fred by the arm. "Leave it, Fred. Let him yell. He's just sore. He lost the jumped up little." "But you like the Weasleys, don't you, Potter?" sneered Malfoy. "Spend holidays there and everything, don't you? Can't see how you stand the stink, but I suppose where you've been dragged up by muggles, even the Weasleys' hovel smells okay." Harry grabbed hold of George. Meanwhile, it was taking the combined efforts of Angelina, Alicia, and Katie to stop Fred from leaping on Malfoy, who was laughing openly. Harry looked around for Madame Hooch, but she was still berating Crabbe for his illegal sludger attack. "Well, perhaps," said Malfoy, leering as he backed away. "You can remember it's your mother's house stank like, Potter. Weasley's pigsty reminds you of it." Harry was not aware of releasing George. All he knew was that a second later both of them were sprinting toward Malfoy. He had completely forgotten that all the teachers were watching. All he wanted to do was cause Malfoy as much pain as possible. With no time to draw out his wand, he merely drew back his fist, clutching the Snitch and tank it as hard as he could into Malfoy's stomach. "Harry! George! No!" He could hear the girls' voices screaming, Malfoy yelling, George swearing, a whistle blowing, and bellowing of a crowd around him, but he didn't care. Not until somebody in the vicinity yelled, "Impedimenta," and he was knocked over backward by the force of the spell, did he abandon the attempt to punch every inch of Malfoy he could reach. "What do you think you're doing?" screamed Madame Hooch, as Harry leaped to his feet. It seemed to have been her who hit him with the impediment jinx. She was holding her whistle in one hand and a wand in the other. Her broom lay abandoned several feet away. Malfoy was curled up on the ground, whimpering and moaning, his nose bloody. George was sporting a swollen lip. Fred was still being forcibly restrained by three chasers, and Crabbe was cackling in the background. "I've never seen behavior like it. Back up to the castle, both of you. straight to your heads of house's office. Now, go. Oh, sorry, that's Madame Hooch saying that. Harry and George turned on their heels and marched off the pitch, both panting, neither saying a word to the other. The howling and jeering of the crowd grew fainter and fainter until they reached the entrance hall, where they could hear nothing except the sound of their own footsteps. Harry became aware that something was struggling in his right hand, the knuckles of which he had bruised against Malfoy's jaw. Looking down, he saw the Snitch's silver wings protruding from his fingers, and he struggling for release. I think we'll stop there.
I hope you like that in my kitten. You're a sweet kitten, Blue, and I love you so much. Sweet dreams. Good night.